Today's scripture comes from Mark chapter 1, verses 9 through 15. About that time, Jesus came from Nazareth of Galilee, and John baptized him in the Jordan River. While he was coming up out of the water, Jesus saw heaven splitting open and the Spirit like a dove coming down on him. And there was a voice from heaven, "You are my Son, whom I dearly love. In you I find happiness." At once the Spirit forced Jesus out into the wilderness. He was in the wilderness for 40 days, tempted by Satan. He was among the wild animals, and the angels took care of him. After John was arrested, Jesus came into Galilee announcing God's good news, saying, "Now is the time. Here comes God's kingdom. Change your hearts and lives and trust this good news."
Well, it's been a while, but as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, the writer of the Gospel of Mark does everything quickly in his account of Jesus' life and ministry. And today is yet another example of his get-to-the-point story. For if you blink twice, Jesus travels from Nazareth and is baptized. He spends 40 days in the wilderness being tempted. And he arrives post-wilderness back in Galilee, starting his public ministry. All of this in six short verses. And unlike Matthew and Luke, we miss any argument between Jesus and John about John's worthiness to baptize Jesus. We don't have a debate between Jesus and the devil in the wilderness. No details about the specific temptations that were going on. Mark moves very, very quickly without details. And yet he fills these verses with powerful witness and echoes of Israel's past. Jesus with wild animals reminds the listeners of Adam naming them. Jesus in the desert for 40 days. Sound familiar? Moses in the wilderness 40 years. God's voice coming from heaven. Isaiah's voice, beholding the servant in whom God delights. Why is this important, you may ask? Well, the first listeners would hear these connections to their ancestors. And they, like us, would sit up a little taller and with a little wider open ears to this gospel story. And us. What do we make of this story? On the surface, it's such a lovely story, isn't it? I mean, truly, we're tempted to break out the guitars, light the campfire, commence to a group singing of Kumbaya. For here comes Jesus from Nazareth of Galilee, a third-class village in a second-class town, which suggests the humble origins of the Messiah. Jesus had a desire and a willingness to be baptized, not necessarily a need. But it was obviously important for Jesus to make a public declaration, to claim God as an authority in his life. Now, as a devout Jew, which folks forget that Jesus lived and died as a devout Jew, Jesus would give witness to the importance of claiming who you are, and in doing so, what we see is that the claiming became a two-way street very quickly. For just as Jesus came up from the waters, can you picture it? He was claimed. And in Mark's gospel, it is only Jesus that hears that claiming. And it is only Jesus in Mark's gospel that sees the heavens torn apart and the Spirit descend. So we get this picture of a very public encounter with God, and yet a very private encounter with God. A public claiming of one's wish to live into God's purpose is followed by God's private and unique transformation of one's life. That makes perfect sense to me. Does it to you? For it's my bet that every single one of us can share unique experiences of how God has spoken to us, how God has transformed our living or shown us that God is God. There is no cookie cutter approach to what it's supposed to feel like when God is moving in our lives. For some of us, we sense God's presence most when we're in the confines of this sanctuary space on Sunday. For others, we hear God more clearly on nature hikes or in streaming waters. For some, we feel God's embrace most in the hug from a spouse or a friend. Some of us, perhaps the majority in this room, find our path to God in the Christian doctrine, in our sincere desire to follow God and the example of Jesus. And yet others, maybe here, but certainly out there, that we share an existence with in our world, they find God in different faith traditions or paths to the holy. And so it appears to me that what's important is what we find in the first three verses of this story, our willingness to be very public in our desire to follow God's purpose for our lives. Do we want folks really to know that God is an authority for our lives? And then our openness to hearing God claim us as God's own with pleasure and pride that we're doing all that we can to fulfill God's vision, not only for our lives, but for the lives we touch. Kumbaya. Indeed. And then the story takes a dramatic turn. Did you hear it? It's as if the guitar strings break. The campfire goes out, and the Kumbaya chorus comes to an abrupt end. For no sooner had Jesus seen that dove-like spirit indicating a peace-filled spirit, no sooner had he felt that dove-like spirit come upon him, than the same spirit drove him into a deserted, lonely, testing wilderness. What is up with that? Oh, how we wish the water that he came up from could have been magical. That simply expressing a desire to be God's vessel were enough. That inviting folks to our baptism would cement our faith lives. Oh, that that could be. And yet it wasn't the case with Jesus. And I would argue it's not the case with us. Baptisms, water blessings, public commitment of our life, by whatever name we call it, all of these are important aspects of our faith and can be very moving rituals in our faith journey. And we'll share some of them together this morning. But brothers and sisters, I would say to you, if we want real transformation in our life, we have to complete that navigation of reorienting our lives. Creating our new selves over and over again, moving from baptismal waters to tempting wilderness. And that is disruptive and life-changing. It was for Jesus, and it will be for us. With his baptism, Jesus signaled the end of his former life. Not, mind you, his sinful life, but his former life. And us, what does the waters of baptism mean for us? Whether it was the first time that we publicly acknowledged our faith journey and used the ritual of baptism to give witness to our intention. Whether we've never been baptized or we might dip our hands in the water this morning to acknowledge that God claims us. Do we dare signal the end of our lives? Many of you know my story that I grew up Southern Baptist and I was baptized as a 9-year-old. And I do remember that something the Baptist said that has stuck with me, lots of the stuff I've sloughed off, but this one I've kept. That when you declare publicly you want to follow God's call for your life, they would say to us as we were baptized, we are laying down our old life and we are bringing up our new one. Do we dare signal the end of an old life that's marred down in greed or comfort or idolatry? Idolatry, you say, oh, Pastor, that's heavy. Not me. I believe in God. Okay, but do we believe in a way that makes our faith journey a real priority in our lives? Because what idolatry means in a true sense is we don't put anything or anyone above God's purpose for our life and for the world, period. The same Spirit of God that moved over the earth at creation descended on Jesus with claiming powers after his baptism. And that same Spirit drove him to the wilderness for the real work to begin. It wasn't the waters that changed his life, my friends. It was the disruption, the discomfort, and the questioning of the wilderness journey. Who am I? Yes, I'm God's, but what does that mean? Why am I here? What am I supposed to be doing? Those were the essential questions of Jesus in those 40 days, and I trust we share them, don't we? In just a few moments, we're going to share what can be some deeply meaningful rituals of our faith. And some of you may be more familiar with them than others. So before we share them, let me share while I'll invite you and me to participate fully. Now we can travel this Lent journey as a matter of habit. It's Lent. And so because others in the Christian tradition follow this pattern, we will too. I hope that's not what we do. We can travel it as obligation. We're supposed to do it because Jesus taught us to. Because Jesus traveled through the wilderness first, we'll try to check that obligatory box and read our devotion every day. I hope that's not what we do either. We can also choose not to participate in Lent. Hey, after all, it is just for Catholics, right? I'll spare you the long history of this liturgical season. And to be sure, Catholics have made this journey an important part of their tradition. But my friends, Lent is for all of us who seek to journey with God. You may choose not to participate because the season of Lent is unfamiliar or uncomfortable. You may claim to be too busy for reading daily devotionals or writing on prayer cloths. But I hope that's not what we choose. Here is my prayer. It's my prayer that we'll be driven to the Lent wilderness so we can meditate and reflect and discern and pray. Jesus claimed publicly to follow God and immediately heard God's claiming of him. And with that two-way assurance, Jesus endured 40 days of wandering and wondering, testing, reflecting, fasting, praying, only to emerge out of that wilderness with a prophetic, life-changing, life-giving, disruptive to the world ministry. in which we'd find Jesus touching lepers and bleeding women, heal on the Sabbath, welcome eunuchs, eat with tax collectors, and share water and bread with forbidden women and children and men who had all but been forgotten. That's what Lent wilderness time did for Jesus. And us? What will it do for you and I? I don't know. And it will be different for every single one of us. Just as Jesus experienced a very private moment after his baptism, we too will experience some private moments between us and God. Perhaps we too might be changed. Might we also hear our name? You. You are my beloved child. You and you and you and you. You are my beloved child. Receiving a dignity and a worth that the world can't, and quite frankly, they won't and they can't give to us. What might Lent be for us? Brothers and sisters, I don't care about us checking boxes. As your pastor and working with our staff and volunteers to design a meaningful Lent journey, we've given some vision to tools for our journey to try to create meaningful moments of worship and devotion. And yet, whether or what we do with them is our choice and very individual. Will we be willing to enter into this important time of reflection that leads us to Easter resurrection? Will we make time to read devotionals? Will we attend a book discussion when we show up for Sunday worship? Will we be so bold and crazy to write on a prayer cloth those things that we really want to recreate or revive or renew? How will we come up from the claiming waters? What will Lent be for us? We got a late start. Can we catch up, church? Will we? Here's the good news. It's up to us. We get to choose if we are all in or just going through the motions. But here's even better news. If we will choose to fully submerge ourselves into this Lent journey, God comes to us where we are. We can be rescued. We can be rescued from grief or loss, from loneliness or busyness, complacency, from self-doubt or arrogance. We can be changed. We can be changed, if only we will. If only we will. Kumbaya. Indeed.